Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everybody now, yeah, yeah, rock your body now, yeah, yeah, everybody.
You know what I was listening to?
What?
Shaggy.
It wasn't me?
You're my angel, you're my darling angel.
Can I name that? No one knows that bit. No one knows what that bit is.
Closer than my peeps you are to me. Baby.
You know, no one knows the bit. Shadow Harder.
Yeah, I don't think he even knew, to be honest. You know, the first ever album I bought was Shaggy.
What?
And first ever single was The Baha Men. Who let the dogs out?
Ooh, ooh. I was like 15 at that time.
Ooh.
Why are you not buying?
I know you're old, man.
No, you're 2 years younger than me.
You're old.
Why are you not buying like a Spice Girls or a Boyzone or something like that?
That came later.
Westlife?
I was a cool kid, man.
I'm flying without wings. What was it?
I don't know.
That was it.
Yeah, how good you are.
Yeah, that was it. Good. Hey, everybody, welcome to a Friday episode of Private Parts. Very, very exciting episode today.
Mm.
Great episode today.
It is very inspiring. Very, I mean, the history is epic.
The history? The history or his story?
His story and the history of his story
is
phenomenal. Like, what he went through. I mean,
unbelievable.
It kind of like disarmed me a little bit when I was listening to it. I was like, Jesus.
Well, it's just incredible. So we have Ed Jackson on the podcast today. Ed Jackson dived into a swimming pool and became paralyzed from the head down. And with the power of himself, his mind, the will to just be resilient and to just push through it, he managed to walk again.
Mm. Well, it was mostly his desire to get a sausage roll from Gloucester.
Yeah.
Services, wasn't it?
A lot of chat about Gloucester Services, Gloucester Roll, which apparently is one of the greatest sausage rolls.
He actually sent me a photo.
He sent me a photo as well.
Oh, I thought it was just me.
He sent a photo of the sausage roll.
Yeah.
If anyone has been to the Gloucester Services and got a sausage roll, apparently it's the greatest sausage roll in the world.
Mm. Oh, should we go there? Day trip.
Yeah, listen, hey. You listening?
Hey, listen, hey, I'm not going to do
hey,
it.
Hey, but... listen, hey, hey.
Hey, come on.
Okay, Ed Jackson. On the podcast. Enjoy. I got told this, by the way, the other day. Apparently, a question, if you're asked it, right,
yeah,
that can tell about who you are, is what type of sandwich you like.
Okay. What do you like?
So, Ed, what do you like? Go for it. You like egg in yours or
thing
something?
Thing that came straight to mind was BLT, but I'm just a bit basic like that. And the other thing I found out the other day, do you know what club stands for? The club sandwich?
Chicken, lettuce under bacon.
That blew my mind.
That blew my mind.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
What would you have? I'm a BLT. That's lame, is anything?
Yeah, I know.
BLT?
Just basic.
You can have anything you want.
I'm not a big sandwich person. I like hot sausage roll from Gloucester Services. I will drive to the M5 to just go and get one of those things.
You're lying.
You haven't lived until you've tried
this
that.
This is saying a lot about you then.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Wait, hang on. So it's the Gloucester Service Station.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you go in there. Is it a Greg sausage roll?
Have you ever been there? No, it's like this is the poshest service station you've been to in your life. It's a farm shop, but it looks like the Teletubbies houses. And it's like this eco service station. And they got a butcher's in each side.
So there's two butchers in one service station.
Well, they have one going northbound, one southbound. So you can order your meat on the way up. Do you do both?
You're lying. I'm not. You're fucking lying.
If this is a lie, that'd be quite impressive, wouldn't it?
I ordered some ribeyes 9 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
They're like, so it's 9:01.
Wait, okay, so your go-to snack is a sausage roll?
That's changed again, isn't it? Go-to snack. My go-to motorway snack is a sausage roll, yeah. When I'm on the
move.
No, hang on a second. You didn't claim it was that. You said sometimes I just drive to the service station.
That's true. Well, technically I'm on the move. I'll find an excuse.
You've got a busy lifestyle of just going around service stations trying out sausage rolls.
I'm telling you.
I love a sausage roll when I eat one, but I never go to get one. I'm not like tempted with like about sausage rolls, but when I actually do have one, I'm like, wow, these are amazing. Why don't I do it more?
I've never have gone to get one until I went to Gloucester Services, and now I find myself there 3 times a week.
they start shuddering when they see you, and they're like, fuck's sake, it's back. What's your sausage?
Do you heat them up or have them cold?
I prefer a hot sausage roll. I never leave it long enough to get cold because they're so good.
There's a really weird like male mentality, which is basically where you get like mini hot chipolatas or something like that. You know how hot they are, but we throw them in our mouths and do that weird thing where we sound like little Santas. And we have to do it and
so
swallow.
You're there lobbing little mini hot chipolatas in your mouth and you sound mental.
Okay, what sandwich do you have?
So the first thing that came to my mind was the spicy tuna from Joe and the Juice. You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, I know that
It's
one.
Good. It is good.
That's like a flat...
That's a very middle-class sandwich, that is.
Coming from the bloke who goes to the butchers in the service station.
It's sausage roll, mate.
If you want a great butcher's...
Yeah, to be fair.
Tell you what my one is.
What?
Egg. Egg mayonnaise.
Immediately weird.
Bacon.
Yeah.
And some chicken.
I thought you were all about...
In the same sandwich?
Yeah.
So you just like everything?
No, I like egg, bacon... Chicken and maybe lettuce
in that order.
Yeah, and I also.
So you're greedy.
It's not greedy.
He's down to earth and I'm middle class. Is that what it
means? Jesus, I don't think that's fair. Actually, what did you used to eat when you were training? Did you have like a strict diet?
No, just used to eat everything. I was always struggled to keep the weight on for my position. I was always a bit small, I suppose. So just ate as much as I can and just lived in the gym. But the problem is,
how tall are you?
6'4".
Are you a bit small for a number 8?
I was 6'4" and I was 18 stone back then. And I looked a lot different, but still, you've got all these islanders coming over now who are like 20 stone. The normal weight of a rugby player has changed quite drastically. So I was just getting as much as I could in. You know what's good for you and what isn't, but at the same time, when you're just trying to get calories in, you
need that size.
Just calories, isn't it?
Because at your story... And the first time we met was were we doing sport relief? Was that what we were doing? Yeah. We were rowing together.
No, it was definitely comic relief because what we were doing was more comical than sport, wasn't it? Trying to row.
We took it so competitively. We got into this. We basically arrived at this day for comic relief, and it was a rowing competition between Channel 4, Sky, ITV, and BBC, and we were sitting on the Channel 4 boat, weren't we?
Yeah,
and. And before we even got in the boat, Carl Frosch, the boxer, challenged me to a 3-minute ergo.
What's that? What's an ergo?
It's a rowing machine. And he went ham. Like he was the most competitive person I've ever come across. But then we did this rowing race and we won.
Yeah, I mean, you're very competitive as well.
Annoyingly competitive.
You literally squared up to Carl Frosch. I don't think you realised that he knocks people out for a living. He like beat you on the rowing machine and you squared up to him like, no, I won that. I was like, Jamie, relax, mate. This is not going to end well for you.
Competitive? No. Well, you were sitting behind me, weren't you? You were sitting behind me in the rowing. All I could hear was, row, row. And I was slipping out of my seat and, get back in, row.
We won though, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course you did. What's the guy that sits on the back and shouts? I thought that'd be you.
The cops. Yeah.
You're a cop.
Sits at the front, I reckon.
But so we met there and I already knew about you already and we became friends there. But your story is pretty incredible, inspirational, and also sad at the same time. Can you explain it to everyone?
Yeah, so in brief, I suppose I know the bit you're talking about.
Yeah, sorry.
So I was born, and this is my mum's name. Yeah.
So start from the beginning.
The first time I went to Gloucester.
Yeah, exactly. Even though those are the most important parts of my life. I was professional, lucky enough to be a professional rugby player for 10 years. Played for Bath, Wasps, London Welsh, Dragons. But then in 2017, I was recovering from a shoulder injury, went to a family friend's house for a barbecue and effectively picked the wrong end of the swimming pool to dive into. It was like a feature pool, had a waterfall in one end, and I dived in with a waterfall, hit the water, thinking it was about 8 feet deep or whatever, and it turned out to only be 3 feet deep.
Oh my God.
And I hit my head so hard on the bottom of the pool that I dislocated the bottom of my neck. The disc in between the two vertebrae exploded and cut my spinal cord, lodged into my spinal cord basically. So there was a big bit of disc lodged in my spinal cord. That rendered me like completely paralyzed from the shoulders down, like immediately. So I'm lying there staring at the surface of the water. First of all, like confused, like why can't I move? Yeah. But then like, oh shit, I'm going to drown here. Fortunately, my dad was in the pool and one of my mates, they saw what happened and realized something was wrong, came over and pulled me to the surface. But I'd had a really serious spinal cord injury. 45 minutes later, the ambulance came. On the journey between from the pool to the hospital, I thought it took about 15 minutes. Found out a year later that my family were waiting for me to turn up for 2.5 hours because the ambulance had to pull over 3 times to resuscitate me.
Oh my God.
So,
Jesus.
Yeah, Christ. I've been.
Why? Because water, because drowning or what?
No, cardiac arrest from the spinal cord injury because it was such a high level. Basically, my heart stopped 3 times. So they had to resuscitate me. I didn't really remember any of that. I just remember feeling sleepy. And then the next thing I knew, I was in the hospital. And then, you know, I ended up and I had a 7-hour operation. And then I was in intensive care for a couple of weeks. It was 9 days. I still had no movement or sensation return. And they said that I was category Asia A1, which is the highest level of spinal cord injury, and I was never going to walk again, and had to get used to life, you know, as a quadriplegic. And fortunately, as you can tell, as we sat here and we were in a rowing race, you know, things didn't transpire like that. I had a bit of a turning point after 9 or 10 days and decided I just need to do everything I could to try and get better instead of feeling sorry for myself, not actually thinking anything would happen. 40 hours later, it did. My toe flicked, and then bit by bit, my body came back to me to the point now I left hospital 3 months later in a wheelchair. 9 months later, I was standing, took my first steps. After a year, I climbed Snowdon for charity, and now I'm an adaptive mountaineer and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. But I still have my spinal cord injury. You know, I'm just physically disabled down one side. Got no sensation down the other side, and I have all the underlying sort of complications that go along with it. So bladder function, bladder, bowel, sexual function, temperature regulation, spasms, all of those sorts of things. But which would, before, if you told me I'd get any one of those things, I'd have been like, fuck that, that's going to ruin my life. You know, even the fact my left hand doesn't work or I can't sleep for more than 2 hours. But in context,
you can't sleep more than 2 hours, did you say?
Yeah, just because my bladder and spasms and stuff. But it's all workable. And when you put it in context of where you should be and realize how lucky you are to be able to do any of this stuff in the first place, then you can live with it. It's all just a perspective thing. So, and then I can drive myself to Gloucester to get sausage rolls, you know, which is kind of
which
the main
was the,
thing.
Which was the real.
That was the turning point after 9 days.
You're like, well, actually, this is fucking fine. Yeah, this isn't a problem at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, we know how to motivate him.
Man, fuck.
That's so.
Oh, dude. Like,
that must have been one of the scariest experiences. Like, I can't even imagine.
Do you know what it's that moment that, you know, it almost makes you. That one moment in your life that you just do changes everything. That just one thing, you're walking around. Oh, a lot of time, what I would do definitely is I would just think, why did I do that? Why do that? That's what I would do. I think a lot of people do that. Did you go through that thinking, why on earth did I do that? I hate it. Why?
Yeah, you must play that moment. I would anyway, play that moment again and again in my head.
If only.
Yeah.
I did for the first week. And that was when I was lying in intensive care, staring at the ceiling. You know, I can't breathe for myself properly. I can't wash myself, can't feed myself, all of those things. Yeah. And then you're just thinking, why has this happened to me? Like, what did I do to deserve this? Mm. What could I have done differently for it not to have happened? But then I realized I was spending all of my time just worrying about all of these things that I had no control over or had already happened. and like they weren't going to benefit me in the long run. Wasn't going to benefit me lying there worrying about that stuff or thinking about what I could have done to change it. So I had to learn to be like, be present in that moment and do whatever I could right then and there to try and get better. And that was the turning point after like 9 days. I went from feeling sorry for myself, lying there thinking I don't want to live anymore or what could I have done differently? This life isn't fair. To then saying to myself, looking at my mum and my wife when the doctor said, look, you need to come to terms with the fact you're not going to be independent again, you're not going to walk again, and thinking this isn't just about me anymore. Like this is going to affect their life as well for the rest of their lives. And if I look back in 6 months' time and they're still caring for me and I'm still in this bed and I know I've cut corners and haven't tried and I've just been lying here feeling sorry for myself, I'll never be able to look myself in the mirror because it will have affected their lives too. But at least if I've done everything I can to try and get better and I still haven't improved, then it was out of my hands and I can live with myself. And that was all I set out to do. That was the mindset change. I didn't actually think anything would happen. So when my toe flicked for the first time, it was like,
fuck, man, what is that moment? But firstly, that's a unique mentality. Like a lot of people, I'm sure, and you've probably met a lot of people in similar situations or something happened to where, because hope is a killer sometimes, but you to have that mentality to go, no, at least I'm going to go and try. Where does that even come from?
Well, I went through the victim mindset piece, you know, like, and normal, that's normal. And I think for me, it was changing my reason why I wanted to get better. It was having that, moving the focus off myself, feeling sorry for myself, to onto the other people that this was going to affect, and making that realization, that was enough to spur me on to put the extra effort in. I don't know how much of it is nature and nurture. I see it happen both ways. People go one way or the other. You don't tend to get people who are like in the middle. People either go extreme one way, like post-traumatic growth, or extreme the other way with like post-traumatic stress. And you can understand both sides. I mean, post-traumatic stress is more understandable than post-traumatic growth. But
what's post-traumatic growth?
I like that saying a lot, post-traumatic growth.
Is that?
I think you kind of have a decision to make where it is like you can focus on all the negative things and let this thing eat you up and end your life effectively because there's so much change involved and it's hard to deal with. Or you can stop waiting for the knight in shining armor or someone to come and save you or for some magical thing to happen so it all gets taken back and just take control of it yourself and try and make the most of that situation because that's all you can do is make the most of a situation. And that's all I've tried to do since that moment. So a lot of people actually use a traumatic moment in their life as a springboard to go on and do loads of other stuff.
Yeah.
Because of that mindset change, because of that perspective thing, they realize how lucky they are to be alive. They realize life's short, so they just start saying yes to stuff. They follow their intuition, their gut a lot more. They don't get wound up by the little shit that used to annoy them before. Yeah. All of those little things just add to your life in loads of ways too. So if you don't go down, if it doesn't break you, it can make you in certain ways because of the mindset changes that happen.
It's like a total reset almost, and you then view life through a completely different lens, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what things did you change? What were you like, why was I even caring about that?
It wasn't a conscious change. Like my whole identity was wrapped up being a rugby player. Like, that's all I'd ever done since I was younger. So losing that was really hard. And also I lost 3 stone of lean muscle in the first 3 weeks because I couldn't move. So like, yeah. I physically changed completely as well. So I felt
sorry,
like,
is that how quickly muscle deteriorates?
Atrophies, yeah. If you don't, if it don't move, can't twitch it or flex it at all, yeah. If
3 weeks gone.
Yeah, your body will use muscle as an energy source before fat because it's more accessible if it's not being used.
Mm.
So, and luckily I was big enough at the time that by the time I started getting some movement back, I'd still retained enough muscle mass to then start my rehab. Whereas a lot of people have actually to the point where they've lost all their muscle mass and they then have spent months trying to build up a bit of strength back so then they can start standing and stuff.
Mm.
But it was more of a mental thing for me. You know, I looked different. I felt different. Everyone had to do everything for me. Like, that pride took a proper battering. So basically everything got swept away in one go. And then since then, it's been a process of like relearning and rediscovering who I am, what I really enjoy, what I'm passionate about, where can I find purpose in my life now? And that whole process of not being able to fall back on the stuff I'd always done has been amazing for me because I've had to rediscover things. And actually I realized now that I was never sort of Ed Jackson, the rugby player. I was just Ed Jackson who played rugby. Mm. And now I can do loads of other stuff. And we're all so quick to put ourselves in these pigeonholes, or society to put ourselves in these pigeonholes of this is what I do. That's because I've always only ever been able to do it. You know, whether you're, you know, you work in the city as a banker, but it might be just because when you were younger, you liked your maths teacher a little bit more. And then you ended up going down that route. And now you think that's the only thing you can ever do and you don't want to jump out of it. But I think we're all so much more capable of than we give ourselves credit for as like human beings.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely had for a long time where I thought I was like, this is who I am. I do a reality show. This is who I am. And I couldn't even get away from it. And actually it made me just feel like, I was like, what the fuck is this about? And I thought that if I was ever going to leave it, it was going to be the worst decision ever, because then what do I go and do? You see it lots in sports, in the army, in jobs, you know, all these different things.
Yeah.
So would you say that you're happier now than you were before?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah. And, That base level of happiness, my base level of happiness is a lot higher because I think the bar shifted on what makes me happy.
Mm.
Before it used to take, you know, winning trophies or man of the match awards or whatever it might be, getting new contracts at clubs and things like that to make me happy. Now it's the fact that I can walk down the stairs in the morning or drive to Gloucester Services. Mm. You know, all of those sorts of things, you know, those things you used to take for granted.
Yeah.
When they get taken away, often it's not until you lose stuff until you really start to appreciate it. And now I appreciate life a lot more. And also, I think I just don't get as stressed by the small shit as much anymore. Like the things that used to wind me up. I realized I'd spend most of my life panicking or pissed off about stuff that A, I had no control over, or B, was completely inconsequential. Or even if it was consequential, I couldn't do anything about it anyway. So once you remove those stresses from your life, you realize how much more room you've got to actually enjoy the things you're passionate about and take those leaps of faith. So,
fuck.
Yeah.
And how lucky were you, or are you, to walk again? That moment when your toe flicks, because you said that my limited knowledge, you sever the spinal cord.
Well, yeah. So what had happened is the shard of disc had lodged in my spinal cord. So what would be 12 millimeters thick was now 6 millimeters thick. So there was still some attachment there. Mm. But after they do something called the ASIA test, which is American Spinal Injury Assessment, which is loads of pinpricks and sensation tests. It takes like 2 hours. They do it every day after your accident. So after your operation, 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. And then after a week, they make an assessment or a prognosis. And I was given the prognosis. I was category ASIA A1, which is the highest level. Basically, you're a complete spinal cord injury and you're not going to make any recovery.
Oh my God.
That obviously wasn't the case because I have made some recovery.
Yeah, so that's weird. They put that in your mind.
Well, this is another big thing, right? You know, it's...
Why are they telling you that?
If I lay there and I took that and I believed that, right? Mm. And I didn't have other people giving me hope, or I didn't have this outside motivation for a life I wanted to get back to, then I'd still be in that hospital bed because you've got to send the signals down. You've got to try. But they want to cover themselves for litigation. It's just the way the NHS is set, the system's set up. But that's fine for some operations. But when it's something neurological, the person has to buy into it and they have to believe it because your brain is the top end of your neurology.
Yeah.
We had some amazing doctors, physios, nurses. Like, the NHS got me back on my feet. But the way it's all structured and the system set up is still a bit backward. And this is a big example of it. And I think they often treat the ailment or the injury physically, but actually, you've got to treat the human being and the person first.
As a whole.
As a whole.
Yeah.
And that mind-body link is just so strong and so obvious. Like, it's so obvious to me now. Like, my recovery would speed up and slow down depending on my mental
state. Are you serious? I saw that. This is crazy about the mind, right? I saw this thing where I watched this documentary, which is called something like 2,300 Personalities. And basically, when an individual has had a lot of trauma as a child, typically it's normally sexual abuse, right? They've had it as kids. What they do is they create hosts. So there's a movie called Split. I don't know if you've ever seen it, which is about a guy creating hosts. It's a true syndrome. I can't remember what it's called. And so the brain, what they do is they create hosts. So they have Jamie as their normal person, but then they create Alex as a host for them, or Ed as a host in their own mind. And they're different people. Sometimes they're older age, sometimes they're younger age, sometimes they're this, sometimes they're that. But they did tests on the hosts. And for example, Jamie, me, who is the normal person, would drink orange juice, would be fine. When they swapped into a host because they were protecting themselves and they drank orange juice, they'd have a severe allergic reaction to it. One person had diabetes and their host didn't. Another person was blind and didn't see. It was the brain just doing that to themselves. That's how wild the brain can be. So you really believe that because you believed you were going to get better, that's what helped you?
I think it definitely was one of the biggest parts of me getting better. But also I didn't necessarily believe I was going to get better from the start. I just knew I had to try so that I could live with myself. But then it was, as it moved forward, you know, I started to realize if I had to keep myself in a positive state of mind, because then my body would recover. And actually, it's sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if you saw recovery, then you would be in a more positive state of mind anyway. But there were lulls. It wasn't a straight journey from the toe flick moving up. There was regressions. There was you know, times where I'd even go backwards. There still is, you know. But I knew that I had to keep myself in a positive state of mind. That came through, like, distractions, having friends and family around. Like, you realize how important your support network is when you actually have to lean on them. Having mates in the room every day, all of those things that a lot of people on the ward didn't have. There were people on the spinal unit for the 2.5-3 months I was there. No one came and visited them. And you just assume everyone's got people, right? But they wanted to lie in bed and they wanted to take as many drugs as they could in the morning and just forget they were even there. And I don't blame them. That correlation between support network and something to live for and something to get better for, and the people putting the effort in, was really obvious to me.
Did you just go when that moment your toe flicks? Were you by yourself? Were you with someone? Was your mum there? What happened? Did you suddenly go, oh my God, something's moved?
Yeah, I was by myself, but I was in intensive care, so you're never by yourself, really. Yeah. And it moved, and then it moved again. And by this point, I was just like a head on a pillow. Like, my body's there, but it doesn't feel like it's part of me. And I can remember...
Does it itch or anything?
No sensation at all. But you did... Some people get phantom pain, like neurological pain. I'm really lucky I didn't have that. But I would stare at my foot and I'd remember how to move it, obviously. So I'd close my eyes, move it. And then you think it's moving, you'd open your eyes, you'd still be moving it, nothing's happening. But then one morning I opened my eyes and it was moving. And then it went again, then it stopped. And I was like, oh, it's a fucking spasm, because I was having spasms. Then I did it again and again. And then I was like, Mum, get in here. My mum was sat outside. I was like,
look at this. Toe's moving. Oh my fucking God. And like, that's the most engaging. Filled me with such like...
Yeah, and it's amazing. That was the most powerful emotion I've ever felt in my life. Apart from getting married, of course.
And this podcast.
Yeah, and this podcast.
Wait, can you try and bottle that for us? What is it?
I mean, it was just like, I never truly thought it was going to happen. But by that point, I'd already put so much effort into, because even though I wasn't physically moving, it was the most tiring thing I've ever done. That intense concentration for like an hour, trying to wiggle your foot, and then you just pass out for like an hour, so tired, then wake up and do it again. And you're just doing it over and over again. And after 3 days, you know, after that nine day period when I decided I was going to go for it, nothing had happened. Of course, you're losing hope. You're just like, but I have to keep trying. And then it happens. And then that is like, that was the turning point. That was the switch. It was like, well, that means all the rules are out the window. They've told me that was never going to happen. So what else can happen? And I never knew how much would come back, but I just went on a mission to get as much as I could.
There must be something almost physiological that happens. Obviously, that's psychological. That's you believing. I'm guessing if that like kind of rewrites and it strengthens each time you think about it, it strengthens that neural pathway until it connects again or something.
Well, look, you can only recover within the scope of your injury. Like if I'd had a completely severed spinal cord, then I can't magic a connection, right? But there was still enough of my spine.
Don't follow the rule book.
Well, Elon Musk might be able to with one of his computer chips. That's happening now. Elon Musk. Did I say Lionel Musk?
Lionel Musk.
That'd be an interesting love child.
Lionel Musk.
Interesting love child.
But go. So you can't magic it then together.
But you can only recover within the scope of your injury. But the thing is, when you hear complete spinal cord injury, most of the time it's not because your spinal cord's severed, because it's like a bit of rubber. It's really hard to sever a spinal cord. And actually, if someone cuts their spinal cord clean in half, more often than not, they'll die. But a complete spinal cord injury just basically means you're not showing any recovery below that level of your injury.
Right.
And it means a cross section of the spinal cord has died, but it could still be there physically. So they assumed mine had died, obviously, because half of it was actually physically cut and the rest of it they'd assumed had died. But obviously there was enough for messages to get through. And to answer your question about how lucky I've been, I would actually go back to hospitals, and I was asked in the early stages to go back to hospitals because of the level of my injury and the scan results. To have made any sort of recovery was still baffling the doctors. So they were asking about what we were doing in terms of rehab and those sorts of things, trying to work it out. And I still don't really know. It's neurological injuries. Like, it's hard to map it. You know, it's not as physical as anything as other things. And there's so much more that plays into it. Like we've just been speaking about the psychological side, which, but I just know I've been incredibly fortunate. Having said that, I could only work with what I already had, and people do have worse spinal cord injuries than me. So they don't have that opportunity to recover as well.
How weak is it now? Your spinal injury, is it still
my neck's probably stronger than it was because I've got a titanium cage in there.
Sick.
That's
actually baller.
Can I test it out?
It's actually a lot stronger because I have
bionic man.
You want one of those now, don't you?
How do you open doors now? Just with your head.
Wait, so you have a titanium cage around it.
Yeah. So I mean, the operation is incredible. They had. Did it all through a microscope through this little cut in the front of my throat. I had to move all of the bits, like the muscles apart in my neck, Jesus. And they operate to the back of your spinal cord. So they like use robots basically to go around, pick all the bits of bone out, disc out of my spinal cord, and then put the cage in, realign my neck because it was still dislocated. So to realign my neck.
God.
And it was quite funny to realign my neck. They put calipers on the. I woke up and I had obviously stitches.
You look like Frankenstein.
Yeah,
literally.
I had stitches down the top of my head, obviously from where my head hit the floor, the pool. Yeah. But I also had like 8 stitches down either side of my head. And it wasn't until a couple of weeks later that the doctor admitted that when I was in hospital, they'd basically clamp your head and traction it. So they pull it away from your shoulders so they can put your neck back in line.
So you were 6'3", now you're 6'4".
It slipped and scalped the side of my head. So imagine in hospital, they're in the surgery going, fuck. Trying to patch your head back together.
Fuck, he'll never know. Lads, he'll never know.
And it wasn't until my toes started flicking that he was like, okay, I can tell him now.
Ed, listen, we've got to stop there for part one. We're going to come back to part two because we've got so many more things to talk about, especially because during lockdown, correct me if I'm wrong, you climbed the height of Everest on your stairs.
Yeah, well, my parents' stairs. I'm not stupid. I'm going to rent my own stairs.
And we'll talk about them in part two. Coming back for that. See you in a bit, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.